Sinbad shook with fear. The serpent had slithered around his tree all night. He'd been stranded in this makeshift treehouse rampart for days. The barrier of palm fronds kept the snake from devouring him, but kept him a captive of the snake. But now, as the sun rose, it slithered off. This was Sinbad's chance to escape. He peered through the fronds and, to his surprise, saw a ship in the distance.
"Help!"
Sinbad instinctively cried out, forgetting that no one could hear him. He had to attract their attention somehow, though. He shimmied up to the highest part of the tree and tied his turban around it as a flag. Sinbad sprinted to the waves. He looked behind him. The monstrous serpent had heard him. It wiggled quickly across the sand, not wanting to let its prey escape so easily. Sinbad waved his arms frantically at the ship. Would they see his turban? More importantly, could the ship reach him before the serpent did? The massive creature writhed easily through the sand, gaining on him. Would it follow him into the waves? It was a gamble he had to take. Sinbad ran, but slipped in the dense sand. He picked himself up and stumbled forward. He was panting, exhausted from starvation. Frantically, he mustered all of his strength. The snake was almost on top of him now. Escape would take everything he had, and good luck on top of it. Sinbad leapt toward the water. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, I'm continuing the story of the seven voyages of Sinbad the Sailor, the epic tale of magic and mayhem on the high seas. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, this story involves dark subjects, including murder and cannibalism. Please exercise caution for children under 13. While Sinbad's voyages are fantastical in nature, and he encounters many supernatural phenomena, it's possible that Sinbad was inspired by a real-life historical figure, Solomon the Merchant. Solomon the Merchant traveled from Persia all the way to China sometime around the year 775 BC. He fought stormy seas and pirates and made it all the way to China. Solomon certainly amazed the people of his time, cultivating an aura of legend and mystery. But others argue that Sinbad is purely a creation of folklore, and the wildly fictional content is evidence that he's simply a character. We'll leave it to the listener to decide. If you want to hear more tales, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. Many of you have asked how to help the show. If you enjoy Tales, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review online. Sinbad dove into the water. When he emerged from the waves, he could see the snake hissing and twisting on the shore, angrily trying to figure out a way to get to him. Sinbad had guessed right. It couldn't swim. Sinbad laughed in relief. He turned to the horizon. The ship was coming for him. He swam out to meet it. As they pulled him aboard, Sinbad had to blink to make sure he wasn't hallucinating. It was the captain from his first voyage, the one who had left him behind on the back of a giant sea monster.
"Captain!" Sinbad cried out in recognition. "Do you not recognize me?"
Recognition spread across the astonished man's face.
"Sinbad!"
He drew the weary man into an embrace. The captain excitedly led Sinbad down below the deck. Sinbad could not believe his eyes.
"I saved all of your wares in the hopes that we would cross paths again," said the captain.
Sinbad could return home to Baghdad with a ship full of treasures. This voyage had not been a loss after all.
"I spent the rest of the journey home in high spirits, telling my former mates what incredible sights I had seen since we had last met," Sinbad concluded,
his audience riveted to every word, the porter included. These stories were beyond the wildest dreams of a man who never left the dusty streets of Baghdad.
"Porter," Sinbad called out. "Here. A modest thanks for humoring an old man's stories of his youth. Perhaps someday you too will go on an adventure."
The porter took the sack gratefully.
"Your tales have been inspiring to the spirit. I will not forget them, or you."
Sinbad the sailor laughed.
"Are you leaving town tonight?"
Confused, the porter shook his head.
"What do you mean?" "Well, I'm just getting started. I have many more adventures and wild mishaps to share. If you'll be so kind to listen tomorrow evening."
The porter's eyes widened, and he nodded. What further wonders awaited him? And so the porter returned the next night. He was growing to love this brave, generous man, and the way he opened his mind. The money was just a bonus. Sinbad had found his stride as a merchant. Reunited with his first bounty, he stayed home just long enough to rest before going out on a new route. He was developing a reputation as a merchant now, and he wanted to uphold his impressive standing. He knew his father would be proud, and he still felt there was some unknown, incredible treasure awaiting him. On his fourth voyage, Sinbad and his fellow merchants set sail for Persia, picking up valuable goods along the way. This would be his most lucrative trip yet. But a stormy sea doomed Sinbad and his fellow sailors yet again. It was an epic maelstrom. Lightning split the sails and the ship caught fire, splintering it into thousands of burning pieces. Sinbad and several of the other merchants held on to floating planks and watched as their cargo sank to the bottom of the ocean, losing everything they had worked so hard for. But the next morning, it appeared fortune was smiling upon them. The tides carried them to a beautiful island. They slept on the beach, relieved and grateful their lives had been spared. When the men awoke the next morning, they took a stroll around the island and discovered houses. This island was inhabited. Happy at their good fortune, they eagerly went up to the homes, but their joy was short-lived. The inhabitants of this island were hostile. A great group of them came out and surrounded the men. They grabbed the sailors and handled them roughly. Sinbad didn't know what they were going to do. He couldn't understand their language. The natives took them into one home and forced them to sit. They gave the men an herb and gestured to eat it. Sinbad watched the native men carefully. They smiled now, encouraging the sailors as if they were giving them a delectable treat. But Sinbad was wary. The other merchants clearly wanted to be hospitable, so they ate the herb, smiling and friendly. But Sinbad noted that the locals weren't touching the substance themselves and decided that he wouldn't ingest it, in case it was some sort of poison. Slowly, his friends started speaking, making no sense whatsoever. They had definitely been drugged by the locals and were losing their minds. They seemed to have no control over their senses. They bumped into things as if their vision were blurred, and they appeared to lack any awareness of their surroundings. As the men slowly lost their bearings, the locals then returned with a great feast of rice, coconuts, and the most succulent local fruit. The men were salivating, and Sinbad wanted to try it. He was ravenous, but he didn't trust these people. Sinbad knew he was starving himself, but he had to trust his instincts. He didn't like what was happening. Sinbad pretended to eat, but when the men weren't looking, he spit out the food. He had no idea how long he had been there. He was growing weak from hunger, and the herbs the locals were giving the men kept them from being concerned about finding a way off of the island. All they wanted to do was eat and sleep. One night, as Sinbad lay wide-eyed in his bunk, wondering if he'd ever see his home again, he heard voices approach their small quarters. The natives burst into the room. Sinbad's men were passed out, stuffed with food and herbs. Sinbad shrunk in his bed, looking more pallid and sickly than ever. One of the natives dragged a particularly hefty merchant from his bed. He hadn't started out that way, but he had quickly put on weight during their time there. Sinbad watched in horror as one of the men raised a large knife and sliced the man's throat, blood spilling out onto the floor. Sinbad covered his mouth so as not to anger the murderous group and tried to pretend he was just a dying man, no threat to them at all. They looked at him, but disgusted with his sickly appearance, let him be. Gleefully, the men began dragging the bodies out of the room one by one, their corpses listless and lifeless. Just moments before, they had been living, breathing friends. Sinbad didn't have to wait long to find out what the natives were going to do with them. They quickly kindled a large fire, roasting the pieces of the dismembered men. Sinewy arms, juicy hearts, succulent kidneys and spleens. Quaking in his bed, Sinbad listened to the men enjoy their feast. Sinbad knew that he had made the right decision. He did not want to be a slab of meat for these disgusting cannibals, but he also knew that he was dying anyway. The men seemed to sense this and left Sinbad alone over the next few days. Finally, while the natives were gathered around a fire, laughing and joking in the language Sinbad could not understand, Sinbad silently crept out of his bungalow and sprinted out of the walls of the compound. Suddenly, as he rounded a corner, he nearly plowed over an old man. The old man's eyes grew wide. Sinbad shoved him out of the way and raced past him. The man shouted after Sinbad, but he didn't turn back. He ran and ran until his lungs felt like they were going to bleed. He didn't stop for days. One morning, as he hurried through a beautiful field, he stumbled upon a group of men and women bent over picking peppers. The pepper gatherers lifted their heads to Sinbad and, by the grace of Allah, spoke to him in Arabic. Sinbad fell to his knees and started weeping. Finally, after all of this time, he could communicate with someone. It was as if he had stumbled onto old friends. They listened with astonishment as he told them his miraculous tale of survival and escape. They couldn't believe he had made it out of the cannibals' clutches alive. After they gathered their peppers for the day, they brought Sinbad back to the king. Sinbad was embraced for miraculously surviving a most arduous ordeal and respected as a wealthy merchant from Baghdad. Sinbad stayed for a month recovering, and the king took a quick liking to Sinbad and requested his company often. They drank wine and laughed, and Sinbad learned of the local customs. So grateful for the hospitality, Sinbad decided to make the king a gift. Sinbad noticed that here the people did not ride their horses with bridles or stirrups, a most unusual style. So Sinbad commissioned the finest saddle for the king. When he presented the gift, the king was blown away by the thoughtful gesture. And more than that, the king quickly learned he loved riding with a saddle. That settled it for the king. He would make Sinbad an honorary citizen.
"I want you to take one of our most beautiful and noble brides, Camilla," he told Sinbad, who could not refuse the offer. Camilla was bright and quick to laugh. Sinbad and Camilla were quickly married and forged a life together that was perfectly harmonious. And yet so many times before bed, Sinbad would lie awake and wonder how it was possible he had taken up an entirely new life.
Each day, Sinbad walked around the sprawling gardens in awe at his good fortune. And yet Sinbad missed his home. He missed the hustle and grit of Baghdad. He longed to sleep in his own bed again. But how could he complain? Sinbad went to speak with his friend Sulayman about his dilemma. Sulayman was a good man who Sinbad had gotten to know on his long walks through the city gardens. When Sinbad arrived at Suleiman's, he found his friend hunched over his dining table in deep distress. Sinbad rushed to his side.
"Friend, what has you down? How can I lift your spirits?"
Suleiman could barely speak. He was so choked up.
"Faria, my beloved wife, has died."
Sinbad knew that there was not much to say to a man who has just lost his spouse. He nodded and thought of something he could say.
"May God grant you a long life with much happiness after this period of grief passes."
Suleiman looked up at him and blinked.
"Do you make a mockery of my situation?"
Sinbad was startled by the accusation.
"No, no, of course not. I merely hope that things get better for you. You're a good man who deserves much out of life."
Suleiman scoffed and looked at him wryly.
"Here it is required that when one spouse dies, both are buried."
Sinbad could not hide his shock and horror. This was barbaric and made no sense. Why would one kill a perfectly good person?
"It is a betrayal to not die together," Suleiman added. "I am to leave in 1 hour.
1 hour later, Sinbad joined the funeral procession up the mountain. Suleiman embraced all of his friends and relatives and joined his wife on the platform that was going to be lowered into the earth. His deceased wife was adorned with all of her jewels and dressed in her finest clothes. Suleiman was given a jug of water and 7 loaves of bread. Sinbad thought it was particularly cruel that they gave him sustenance. Who wouldn't want to die quickly at this point? He couldn't watch as Suleiman was lowered into the pit. Suleiman's wail would haunt him forever. Sinbad returned with a heavy heart to his wife that evening, who was uncharacteristically in bed at a very early hour. Camilla looked at Sinbad with red-rimmed eyes.
"I'm so sick," she moaned. "I feel like I'm dying."
Sinbad's eyes widened in horror. We'll continue Sinbad's adventures after these messages. Now back to the story. Sinbad didn't leave Camilla's bedside once, praying to Allah for her survival just as much for her as for himself. Sinbad cared for Camilla, but Sinbad also spent these days realizing that he wasn't in love with her, and he felt it was particularly cruel to have to perish for a woman he only felt mild regard for. And then, just like that, she was gone. Guards came almost instantly to make sure that Sinbad would not try to flee, but be buried alongside a woman he had married out of courteousness. Sinbad knew that he must escape. He never wanted to be a citizen of this place anyway. He went immediately to the king to ask for pardon. He was a foreigner. He should not be subjected to this inhumane practice. But the king and his court were unyielding. A rule was a rule. Perhaps he should have read the marriage contract a little more closely. The best they would do for Sinbad was to agree to attend his funeral in a show of deference and respect. Sinbad was given the same provisions as Suleiman, and he was to be buried the very afternoon Camilla died. Sinbad refused to make eye contact with the king as he was lowered down. He was furious. As the platform descended, Sinbad saw that they were entering what appeared to be an endless cavern, possibly 50 fathoms deep. He saw with some respect that Suleiman had leapt off the platform so that he would be killed instantly. His corpse had landed on a rock, crushing his skull. Blood was spattered everywhere. Sinbad hopped off of the platform. The floor of the cave was covered in bones. He could barely see the sandy floor beneath. Once the rock closed above them, Sinbad had no light whatsoever. He realized this was now the challenging part. How could he find his way out with no torch? He ate his bread and waited for an idea. He wasn't going to give up hope yet. Sinbad was growing weak after a few days. He had eaten all of his loaves and gone through his water. He had little strength and was losing faith. Sinbad shut his eyes and tried to listen. He could have sworn he heard something. He had been in the dark for so long that his mind would often play tricks on him, including one delirious moment where he swore that Camilla had come back to life. But no, she was next to him, rotting. But now Sinbad was sure that he heard something. Sinbad couldn't be positive, but if there was an animal in here, then there must be a way out. He closed his eyes, feeling his way through the rocky crevices. He tried to follow the noise. Surely he couldn't be imagining this. It was real. Sinbad pursued the animal. His pursuit seemed to make the animal nervous, and it would speed up when he got close to it. But this made Sinbad happy. The faster he could get out of here, the better. Finally, after what felt like hours of running through darkness, he saw a sliver of light. He blinked to make sure it wasn't a mirage. Sinbad tumbled out of the rocks and onto the seashore. He cried with relief. He praised Allah. He had never been so happy to be stranded on a seashore. As he looked up at the sun, he saw a ship in the distance. He used his turban as a flag, screaming at the top of his lungs. When the boat turned toward him, he laughed deliriously, swimming out to meet it. He couldn't believe that this miserable chapter was coming to an end, and he was going to live to tell the tale. Sinbad the porter suddenly noticed that he had tears streaming down his face. He was so moved by Sinbad the sailor's triumphant return from being buried alive. Sinbad the sailor smiled at the porter.
"That was exactly my reaction, my friend."
And then Sinbad handed him another sack of gold coins. When the porter tried to refuse, Sinbad insisted it was for the pleasure of his company, as well as to ensure he would return the next evening. The porter was growing so accustomed to this nightly ritual, he hoped the stories would never end.
After spending a year or so at home, I still felt like something was missing from my life, and decided to set out on the seas again in the hopes that I would find it. And so, for my fifth voyage now, I was ready to be my own captain,
Sinbad said proudly.
I found a marvelous vessel and enlisted some other merchants I knew that could help me.
The men set sail, carried by a gentle wind. They first docked for a rest at a desert island. Sinbad noticed quickly that this was a breeding ground for rocks, recognizing their large domed eggs rising up from the ground. The men marveled at the egg's enormous size and were shocked that one was ready to hatch. The beak was poking out, ready to burst into the world.
"Stand back!" Sinbad called to his men.
They had never encountered a rock before and appeared to lack the reverence and intimidation that should come from dealing with a creature of that magnitude. But the merchants ignored him. They ran to it with their hatchets, forcing the shell apart, hacking into the baby bird's limbs. Sinbad was horrified. He couldn't stop them. They were ravenous and wanted the easy meal. One of the men quickly kindled a flame, roasting the giant newborn alive as they dismembered it. They offered some to Sinbad, but he couldn't bear to see what they were doing to the spawn of such a noble bird. Suddenly, the sky overhead darkened. Sinbad knew what that meant. He looked up, and sure enough, there were two rocks flying towards them, like two ominous shadows coming to exact revenge.
"Run!"
Sinbad screamed. He raced to the ship. The alarmed men followed in quick pursuit. They hurriedly climbed onto the ship and pushed off into the sea, but it was too late. The rocks had spotted them, and they were flying with great speed towards them, with massive boulders clutched in their talons. They were going to drop them on the ship. The first one landed squarely on the ship's deck, Sinbad's beautiful new ship was crushed to smithereens. The voyage was already over and doomed. One of the rocks instantly crushed the steersman, and another two were ejected by the impact into the waves, drowning instantly. The next boulder dropped, and the others were crushed under the splintering debris, whacked unconscious, impaled by splintered planks. Once again, Sinbad found himself lost in the ocean, clinging to driftwood. Sinbad allowed himself to be carried along by the tides, mercifully shepherded to the safety of a beautiful shore. Trees dotted the island. He easily found fruit and fresh water. He sighed, exhausted and disappointed at this failure of a start. Why couldn't any voyage just go smoothly? As he began to explore the island, he stumbled across an old man who looked so weak that Sinbad thought he might die right before his very eyes. Sinbad rushed over to the poor fellow.
"Are you all right there?"
Sinbad asked with concern.
"Are you shipwrecked too?"
The man gestured. It was clear that he did not speak Sinbad's language. He appeared to be signing for Sinbad to carry him on his shoulders, which Sinbad was happy to do. He'd bring this man to safety, somewhere. But no sooner had he mounted the man on his shoulders than the man sprung to life with the spryness of a teenager. He tightened his legs around Sinbad's neck so tightly that he couldn't breathe. Sinbad tried to throw the man off of his shoulders, but the man's legs were locked around his neck like an iron vise. His eyeballs were bulging. He could feel the veins in his forehead throbbing for oxygen. This man was going to kill him. We'll return to Sinbad's fight for his life after this quick break. Now, back to the story. The old man tightened his legs around Sinbad's neck. Sinbad thought he'd faint, but suddenly the man lessened his grip slightly and kicked him hard in the ribcage. The old man pointed. He wanted to ride Sinbad like a pony. Sinbad tried to shake him off now that he could breathe again, but it was no use. The man was wrapped impossibly tight around him. And at night, the old man slept with his legs clenched around Sinbad's neck, just loosening his grip enough so that Sinbad could breathe. If Sinbad so much as twitched, he would tighten up again. There was no getting away. The man rode like a pony day after day for weeks, roughly directing Sinbad with a swift kick if he veered in a direction that displeased the man. One morning, Sinbad found a dry calabash that had fallen from a tree. He decided to use it to press and store some grapes, and after a few days, it fermented into a nice wine. He had not had wine in a very long time, and he delighted in its effects. He relaxed a little and laughed and sang. This entire situation was ridiculous, and now he could see the humor in it. The old man noticed Sinbad's good humor as he drank his homemade wine and demanded that Sinbad share. The old man liked it too. The old man also became more relaxed. He sang and danced from side to side, and gradually his legs became slack and his grip loosened. Sinbad let this go on for a few minutes to make sure that the man was not just momentarily shifting position. No, the man was genuinely drunk. Sinbad quickly slammed the man to the ground. He watched as the man lay there motionless. Had he killed him? Better to be safe. Sinbad quickly picked up a rock and raised it over his head, bringing it squarely down on the man's skull. Sinbad watched as the old man's brains leaked into the dirt. Sinbad lay there for a few moments in disbelief. Finally, he walked wearily to the beach, where he stumbled upon a crew of sailors that had dropped anchor to gather fruit. Sinbad collapsed in front of them. They rushed to his aid, asking what had happened to him. As Sinbad recounted the tale, The men's eyes widened in disbelief.
You encountered the old man of the sea and lived to tell the tale?
Their voices quavered with incredulity. Sinbad had never heard of this name, but as he described what had befallen him, they nodded that this was indeed the old man of the sea. No one had ever escaped him before. He could not believe his good fortune in surviving. And so, with great awe that Sinbad had killed this dreaded foe, they returned him home safely. As Sinbad concluded his story, he sent the porter home with more money and a request that he should accompany him the next night. He wasn't done yet. Now that Sinbad the sailor had miraculously survived 5 shipwrecks, his family and close friends did everything they could to convince him to retire. They told him he had enough wealth for 10 men. He had tempted fate too many times now. How much longer could he keep getting lucky? He was years older now, and all of his traipsing about had taken a toll. He had to take a year to recover from that 5th expedition. But Sinbad had life in him yet, and he would be damned if he was going to spend it sitting around his plush home like he was an old man with 1 foot in the grave. No, he was still ready to see what the next voyage had in store for him. On his 6th voyage, Sinbad decided that he would not be the captain. He didn't want to go through that again. He hired a seasoned captain, and they set sail. Everything seemed to be going well until one afternoon. The captain threw his turban onto the ship's deck in frustration.
"What is happening, Captain?"
Sinbad inquired. The captain shook his head sorrowfully.
"We have found ourselves in the most dangerous place in all of the ocean."
Sinbad looked around. The seas looked placid enough. It didn't seem so bad, but the captain continued.
"We can't get out of this current. We are headed towards a rocky terrain that will splinter the ship into a million pieces. We shall all perish."
Sinbad suddenly noticed that the ship was being carried swiftly, pulled without any assistance by a powerful undertow. The ship slammed into the rocks and continued towards the mountainous shoreline of the island that was surely the cause of their demise. The foot of the mountain was treacherous indeed, all jagged spikes and sharp edges. There was no way a ship could dock here, much less sail away from it in one piece. The men watched as their hopes and goods were dashed on the rocks. As they sprung from the broken ship and made their way to shore, they discovered the rocky terrain littered with bones of men who had met the same fate. The worst part was not that they had lost all of their provisions, but that there was no way off of this beach. Any ship that came to this shore would suffer the same fate, and therefore would be in the same position as they were. The one saving grace was that there was a river of fresh water running from deep within a cavern that came out to the sea. And when they waded into the cavern, they discovered a treasure trove of sparkling gems and precious stones lining the walls. But these rubies and crystals could not feed the starving men. One by one, Sinbad's companions slowly starved to death. Sinbad had conditioned himself to survive on little food after his experience with the cannibalistic natives, but even he was weary and didn't know how much more he could take. When the last man perished, he had to make a plan. Sinbad realized his only option was to make a raft from the debris on the shore and sail into the dark cavern, hoping it would take him to an inhabited, accessible part of the island. He set sail into the glittering cavern. The walls were lined with more rubies, crystals, and ambergris than he ever thought could exist in the world. He filled the raft with all the jewels he could without sinking it. The jewels reflected and refracted even the tiniest sliver of light, keeping the cavern bright for miles. But eventually, he lost any light whatsoever, and it felt as if he were sailing into the dark center of the earth, never to be seen or heard from again. Finally, Sinbad closed his eyes, ready to die. He accepted this would be his final voyage. Sinbad was suddenly surrounded by strange men. The sunlight was so bright he had to blink and squint. What was happening? He spoke a few words, and the men understood Arabic. He came to understand he'd been rescued from the cavern by men from the land of Serendib. The men took him to meet their king. Once again, Sinbad was treated with the utmost respect for having survived insurmountable odds and conditions. He informed the king that all he wanted was to return home to Baghdad. He was so homesick, he wept. And so the king, moved by his emotion, lent him his finest ship and sailors to take him home. Sinbad the porter shook his head as Sinbad the sailor concluded this tale.
"Surely you returned with more valuables than any other merchant before, and with such honor."
"Indeed," Sinbad the sailor nodded.
"But I still had one more voyage in me. I was not as young as I once was, but something in my heart urged me to go out one last time, even if it killed me. And so I went."
"This may shock you, but we were instantly shipwrecked yet again."
Sinbad laughed, shaking his head.
"And once again, I was taken in by a kindly king who took pity on a wealthy stranger who had survived catastrophe after catastrophe."
Sinbad and the king got on quite well, and he asked Sinbad if he would marry his daughter, Roya, since he had no male heirs. Sinbad was not only honored to take the hand of such an intelligent and loving woman, but to be gifted a kingdom along with it. The strange thing about this new kingdom was that once a month, some of the citizens turned into birds. In all of his travels, it was one of the most peculiar things he had ever encountered. One day, he decided to go with one of them to see where they went. The day the ritual took place, he climbed on the back of a birdman and soared towards the sun. It was as if he was flying himself. He praised Allah and all of the angels in heaven. But suddenly, right as Sinbad was glorifying God, the sky blackened and lightning began striking down all of the birds, setting them on fire. The head of the bird Sinbad was riding caught on fire, and it careened to the ground. Sinbad jumped off right before he was engulfed in flames. He ran home to Roya, who explained to him what happened. The birds were evil spirits, and Sinbad's praises to God had called down the angels, punishing the bird demons. His wife Roya was in tears.
"We must go. If you are the one that caused all of this, then they will come and kill you next. I have heard tales of the demon bird since I was a little girl. Their wrath is legendary, and you have shown them for what they are."
"But how could we leave your kingdom, princess?"
Sinbad said. Roya looked at him with watery eyes.
"I care not for the devil birds and rulership. I want to live a simple life with you. You are a king no matter where you go."
It was then that Sinbad knew that after all of this time, he had found what he was looking for. Love.
"And so I returned home with a wife, and then I was ready to be home for good."
Sinbad the porter was so enraptured with the tales that he had not noticed that sitting next to Sinbad the sailor was Roya herself, a most beautiful woman, and she looked at Sinbad with admiration. Sinbad the porter thought this was the most perfect ending to a tale of adventure and misfortune, to find true love. Sinbad the sailor handed the porter another sack of money. The porter couldn't believe how just one chance encounter had now changed his own life.
"Thank you. I will never forget your generosity," the porter said. "You will always have a friend in Sinbad the Sailor."
He smiled warmly and shook his new friend's hand. As Sinbad the porter left the home that night, he couldn't help but think that now that he had the money, perhaps he would try his hand at being a merchant. He decided to head off to the docks to see about procuring a ship. The voyages of Sinbad have had wide-reaching impact for centuries. Some scholars say that these tales had direct influence on other adventure stories by later authors, particularly Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels and Willem Dafoe's Robinson Crusoe. But Sinbad still merits his own place in the literary canon, regardless of how many adventurers came after him. He is a heroic figure who reminds us to seek new lands, to never give up when the odds are stacked against you, and most importantly, to be generous and give freely. And perhaps then fortune will smile upon you too. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more episodes of Tales or Parcast podcasts, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. Some listeners have been asking how to help the show. If you enjoy the show, the best way to do that is to leave a 5-star review. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Gina Machusek. I'm Vanessa Richardson.